and Human Services to order on February 16, 2005. And I want to take a moment to welcome everybody in the audience for joining us this morning. It's a great turnout, a lot of energy, so we appreciate you being here. And this is, colleagues, a group that consists of members of Oregon's Women Health and Wellness Alliance. So welcome this morning. Colleagues, we're going to take up two bills this morning, House Bill 2497, 2498. These are bills, these are a collection of bills that continue ongoing essential coverages for women in terms of in health insurance policies, and these bills are up for reauthorization this year. There was a six-year sunset on these bills, and we're going to be taking up these bills to continue these in critical services as part of insurance packages. And so we're going to have a program. We have, I think, four legislators that are signed up to testify. And I wanted to remind all the members of the public, if you wish to testify, make sure you have your name on the side table there. We're going to try to go about an hour and a half on these two bills, and hopefully we'll be able to accommodate everybody's testimony so that everybody has a chance to participate. I'm going to I'm going to open a public hearing and a possible work session on. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on both bills at the same time so that you're free to comment on both of the bills. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2497 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2498. And, Colin, just a little bit of housekeeping. There was some discussion about whether or not the bill that was drafted, these two bills, contained a sunset provision, or if they didn't contain a sunset provision. And I just wanted to ask you to refer to your bill language so that we could point out a few things.
And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have a bill in front of you behind the preliminary SMS for your reference.
And so what I wanted to share, particularly on House Bill 2498, is it's pretty clear. On line 20 references a sixth anniversary effective date of this statute. There is a section in Oregon law that refers to a myriad of what are called mandates on health insurance coverage policies. And these four mandates are included in the law at that section, which is why they're set to expire on the sixth anniversary. The way that we've constructed these bills, the way that I had them drafted in the Legislative Council, and that this committee as a whole voted out as a committee bill to have these drafted, was that we are pulling these four coverages out of that section into a standalone section so that there wasn't going to be an issue about the six-year sunset. So I just wanted to make that clear. This is what this committee did as a whole when we introduced these two bills. Yes, sir.
Mr. And Kinley. We have two amendments attached to it to be considering as well.
Thank you. We have two amendments. I would wanted to talk a moment about the amendments, and Representative Rosenbaum will speak on them as well, but sort of to foreshadow Representative Rosenbaum's comments. One of the amendments that you have in your possession has to do with an attempt to extend the sunset, and that's not going to be acted upon because we have resolved that issue when we drafted the bill altogether. And then the second amendment is going to be to expand the coverage of the breast examination from, I think, the age of 50 years old, 40 years old, down to 18 years old. Representative Rosenbaum will speak to that. We have, so the committee is aware, we have a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means on these two bills. And I have received approval to remove the subsequent referral to Ways and Means and move this bill directly out of this committee and onto the floor, which is my intention. which is my intention this morning, if there aren't any objections from the panel. And so we will listen to the testimony very closely and make sure that we can do that in a deliberative fashion. On these amendments, particularly the one that lowers the mandatory screening age, we're going to have Representative Rosenbaum speak to that, but it is not our intention to move that amendment at this time, but instead consider that to be taken up on the Senate side, and we will work on that. So with that, Sandy, did you have some comments?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll proceed with our agenda, and I would like to invite Representative Rosenbaum, Senator Kate Brown, and Senator Berger up at the same time if you wanted to sit in panel and ask Representative Rosenbaum to introduce these measures to us. So good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am State Representative Diane Rosenbaum from House District 42 in Southeast Portland. First, I want to particularly thank the chair of this committee for scheduling these two bills in such a timely fashion. These are extremely important to the women of Oregon and their families, and we are very grateful for having this hearing today. I'm testifying both on House Bill 2497 and 2498, and I first want to just stress that these bills probably are among the most important bills, I think, that you will consider this session. The chair did an excellent job of introducing the topic. What we're talking about here is basic women's health care, and we have found that we, by having this requirement in the law, have not only been able to save countless lives in Oregon, but we've also been able to save a great deal of money, because we know that by providing annual coverage for a basic women's health exam that includes a mammogram, a pap smear, we hope also clarifying that that includes a clinical breast exam, and then in addition providing pregnancy coverage, that what we are doing is providing basic preventive health care. We know that by doing these screenings, by doing these exams, we are uncovering many cases of cancer that were undetected before the exam took place, and detecting these cancers at an earlier stage when they are more treatable with less invasive procedures and also at less cost. So we think that this is really the perfect marriage between an issue that's good for the health of Oregon's women but also good for the pocketbooks of Oregonians, and we can't imagine what would be a better combination. So basically that is what House Bill 2497 does, is simply continue the coverage that has been required for years in Oregon law. And I want to say just a word about the sunset itself, because I think, you know, it might have made sense at one time to have a sunset on these bills when we might have been trying to figure out would we be actually saving lives and also saving costs. But that's no longer the case. We now know, and there will be a lot of women and their physicians talking to you today about the fact that this is the case, that these are not experimental procedures, that they will tell you their stories of how they have been saved by having this coverage. And so we think that it's time to say this is basic health care for the women of Oregon, and it should be made a permanent feature of our law. I also want to mention in House Bill 2498, which is the bill that clarifies what I think many of us believed was already the case, that clinical breast exams are also part of a basic health exam for women. Having just a mammogram is great, but without a clinical breast exam, it's not as meaningful as it could be, because those two things really should happen in conjunction with each other. Often, you know, lumps that are detected on a clinical breast exam then can guide the mammogram and vice versa. So we think those two things really work together. I also want to say a word about the amendments. You have two amendments in front of you. One of them, the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2498, was drafted through my office at the request of an insurance company just to provide a definition of what a clinical breast exam actually is, and I hope that you will be able to move that amendment into the bill today. The other, which is the Dash 2 amendment the chair talked about earlier, the bill now calls for an annual exam when women reach the age of 40, but actually, and you'll hear more technical testimony about this, we believe that it should be done at the age of 18 when these exams start, because what you really want is to have a baseline exam when you're healthy so that as changes develop, you've got some track record and something to compare it to. I fully understand that that amendment may not be moved this morning, and we are very supportive of moving the bill today and dropping the referral to Ways and Means, and if that's what it takes to make that happen, we are completely understanding of that and very grateful that that will happen. So finally, I just want to urge you in the strongest terms to listen to the testimony and then hopefully to come down on the side that I have with the women of Oregon and their families, that this is basic health care, it's cost-effective health care, and that it is time to make it a permanent feature of our law. I thank you once again for holding the hearing today, and hopefully after you've listened to the witnesses, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. Are there any comments? Representative Greenlee?
Yes. I obviously support both these bills, as you know, but I do have a question on 98, and it's probably useful to put on the record what's intended here. My assumption is that health insurance, that we're talking about health insurance that covers doctor office visits, independent of this bill, and that the visit with the gynecologist or the family physician would be covered currently under health insurance. So the purpose of this is to provide an extra payment for the clinical breast exam to be covered under health insurance?
I think that you will get testimony from Dr. Steiner from OHSU and, sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee. It's been a while since I've done this. From this side of the dais, you will have testimony from Dr. Elizabeth Steiner, who is a specialist in this area from OHSU, about the need for this bill to be passed. Certainly, part of what we're trying to do is draw attention to the fact that a physical breast exam is needed as part of this exam, and she'll talk about some wonderful work that they've been doing on a new technique for doing those exams. So we want to clarify that taking the time needed to do the best kind of clinical breast exam is part of what's covered by insurance. So thank you for that question. That's definitely what's intended here.
She's both my colleague and my constituent, Mr. Chair, so I can wait for that.
Thank you, Representative Greenlee. And Representative Rosenbaum, thank you very much. We appreciate all your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Berger.
Good morning, Chair Dalto and members of the committee. I'm Joanne Berger. I'm a state senator from Senate District 5, and I reside in Coos Bay, Oregon. Senate District 5 is mostly all coastal, and I'm happy to be here today. My purpose is to put a human face on the bills that you're going to be hearing, and I'm here particularly in support of House Bill 2497. As a person who has had annual mammograms over many years, I was stunned in December to find that I had a bad mammogram. And so after needle biopsy and surgery, I was given a clean bill of health because the malignant tumors had not involved the lymph nodes. Obviously, the mammogram has given me years of life. And I wanted to say that in December, when I had the bad mammogram, I have never felt better in my life. I had more energy. I was busy with Christmas. And so I want to emphasize the insidiousness of two malignant tumors in my body that were totally unknown unless I had had the mammogram. I also want to encourage those who are behind me, if they have such a diagnosis, that my surgery was on January the 4th, and on January the 10th, most of you saw me raise my hand high and be sworn in as a state senator. And I am feeling very, very well. And so the early detection is just critical. And I, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to just read a couple of lines. I received a note yesterday from the mammogram technician who has done all of my mammograms over the years, and she heard about my surgery. And she said, I am always shocked and dismayed to find breast cancer in the many patients that I do, especially someone I know. And so I want you to realize that growing numbers of people who are finding that they do have breast cancer and early detection through the mammogram. And thank you so much for allowing me to put my human face and story on the testimony this morning.
Thank you, Senator Berger.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kate Brown. I represent Senate District 21, Portland, and the City of Milwaukee. I'm delighted to be here as co-chair of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance to testify in support of both bills, House Bill 2497 and House Bill 2498. As most of us know, breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death among women, and one out of every eight women will develop breast cancer in her lifetime. In 2001, 2,400 Oregon women were diagnosed with breast cancer. Clinical exams are an integral component of a woman's annual exam and are absolutely crucial to early detection of breast cancer in women of all ages, but particularly for younger women. These exams not only screen women for breast cancer, but also help women to learn self-screening techniques. Presently, there's no cure for breast cancer, so early detection is our best shot at saving women's lives, and I believe Dr. Steiner is going to be giving you the details later. House Bill 2497, the sunset provision that would require us to come back in 6 years and renew these health care standards would needlessly expend the time and resources of the legislature. I'm extremely grateful for that being repealed. I've been through this process before. In 1993, we established the mammogram and gynecological exam mandate. And, Mr. Chair, if I seem excited this morning, it's because I can't tell you the blood, sweat, and tears that went into passing that bill, despite the fact that many of us had a colleague on the House floor at the time, Representative Nancy Peterson, who ended up passing away from cervical cancer. But it took a lot of people fighting, working to pass that bill back in 93. We again had the fight in 1999. I think it took my women colleagues on the state Senate floor surrounding our former colleague, Senator Bill Fisher, and encouraging him to repass the bill in 99 before we got that moving. So that's why I'm so grateful to you to hearing these bills this morning and hopeful that you will consider moving them forward. I also wanted to thank the numerous women who are here today to share their stories, particularly my colleague, Senator Verger. It's because of their courage that we are here considering repassage of this bill and passage of House Bill 2498, and I thank them. They're incredible women.
And so are you, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Representative Dalton.
Thanks for being here. Comments, colleagues? Okay. Thank you so much. Next, I'd like to invite Representative Arnie Roblin forward. Representative Roblin, to the air. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Dalto and committee. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin. I am a representative from House District 9, which is also on the coast, and the seat that Senator Verger had before my opportunity to come and serve here at the legislature. I felt it was important for me to come forward to talk and put a face on this issue from the perspective of a parent. As a father of a daughter who has had a number of issues, and last night I took the opportunity to call my daughter and talk to her again and explain to her that I wanted to testify, and she's one of the shy people in my family, and so I felt it was important that I talk to her before I shared the family history that we share together. And so I am hear really about 2497, the annual testing, and I really appreciate what the committee has done with respect to taking away the sunsetting clauses in that particular bill. Approximately, 5 years ago, 2000, my daughter had been feeling ill in little ways for a long time and had gone in for annual checkups and her pap smears, and she finally got one that was kind of irregular, but they really weren't quite sure, so they did some biopsies and made the determination that she had cervical cancer, went ahead with a partial hysterectomy, and at that time, after the hysterectomy, they did the test and they realized that it was not cervical cancer, and in fact, it was uterine cancer, that led to a whole lot of other issues in our family in the discussion, since she had, they had left her ovaries, and so our family prayed pretty regularly about this whole issue, and then in 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And at that time, the operation took place. And let people know, her first cancer bout was when she was 28 years old. The second issue, when she went in for the operation 2 years ago, to have her ovaries removed, she was 32. She's currently 34, just had her birthday the other day. And we are grateful that she is with us. We still live in that fear that other things can happen. But in each of the cases, diagnosis happened very early. There was no involvement in the first case in her uterine cancer in any place other than in the uterus. And when the ovarian cancer was found again, there was no indication in any lymph nodes or anything else. But because it had been such a silent and secretive kind of cancer, and the doctors were totally shocked that the ovarian cancer was there, they decided to put her through and do a chemotherapy. This is in California. And we got to go through that experience. And having had a father who went through a lung cancer experience, we had the opportunity in our family to have long discussions and to be supportive of our family. And so as a parent, and as a person who worked in public schools for 32 years, you know, watching issues with regard to women's health has been an important thing for me. This is an important bill. It is an important opportunity to make it clear to the people of our state and others that we do take seriously the opportunity and the obligation that we have to ensure that our women's health issues are taken care of on a permanent basis. So I commend you for the work you're doing, and I certainly appreciate all the efforts you've made and encourage you to pass this bill and send it onward. So thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Representative Roblin, for sharing that story with us. I hope your daughter does well. We pray that every day.
Thank you.
Okay. We move on to inviting members of the public to come forward. It's about, it's sort of hard to count here, but there's about 18 or so folks, just to let you know how many folks are signed up. So the first person I would like to invite up is Dr. Elizabeth Steiner. Is Dr. Steiner available? Great. And then after Dr. Steiner, I'll try to invite you up in panels of three, if you don't mind. That will help save a few moments. So good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
If you could introduce yourself, that would be terrific.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And thank you again for inviting me to speak in favor of House Bill 2498. I should note that I'm also strongly in support of 2497, but I was specifically asked to tell you more about the issues around 2498.
If you could tell us your name, that would be...
Sorry. I'm Elizabeth Steiner, and I'm a family physician with 15 years of clinical experience. For the last 5 years, I've been at Oregon Health and Science University as a research assistant professor of family medicine and as associate director of the OHSU Cancer Institute's Breast Health Education Program. The Breast Health Education Program is an integral part of the Cancer Institute's Cancer Control and Prevention section. Since 1999, the Breast Health Education Program has trained almost 700 clinicians around Oregon to perform vertical strip, three-pressure method clinical breast exam, or CBE, as you'll hear me refer to it, has implemented similar training programs in all the family medicine, internal medicine, and obstetrics and gynecology residencies around the state, and is doing ongoing research on the benefits of different forms of CBE training at all levels of medical education. In addition to my academic roles, I also serve as chair of the Commission on External Affairs for the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians and sit on the legislative committee for the Oregon Medical Association. Both of these organizations offer strong support for both 2497 and 2498. House Bill 2498 would require insurance companies to include CBE in the list of covered women's health services. There are several medical issues that make this proposed change reasonable and prudent. First, mammography alone isn't enough to detect breast cancer at its earliest, most treatable stages. This is particularly true for women under the age of 45. Second, early detection saves lives. Third, early detection reduces healthcare costs. Fourth, many women know they do not need annual pap smears under current medical protocols, and so they do not seek annual screening CBE because this service is not covered separately. Fifth, many clinicians do not have enough time to do a high-quality CBE, in large part because they are not reimbursed for this care independent of a routine women's health exam. Finally, CBE benefits all women, especially those under 45, and will continue to be a benefit in the long term, regardless of technological advances. I have a choice of looking at my paper or my microphone, being up from my microphone. Apologies. Let me speak first about the value of mammography, screening mammography. Unfortunately, many clinicians and patients misunderstand the value and limitations of this technology. While mammography is an important part of breast cancer screening, it is insufficient unless combined with high-quality clinical breast exam. Mammography has a false negative rate of up to 40% in women under 45, and even as high as 10% in women over 60. The false negative rate is the percentage of times a test is normal when the patient actually has the disease. So in the case of mammographic screening, for every 100 women under 45 who have breast cancer, mammography will discover only 60 and leave 40 cases undetected. This is why high-quality CBE is so important. Many of the cancers that mammography misses can be found early with good CBE. This brings us to the next important point. 95% of women diagnosed when cancer is confined to the breast itself, this is called stage 1, are alive and well 5 years after that diagnosis and essentially considered completely cured. But only 75% of women diagnosed at stage 2, when the cancer is spread outside the breast, are still alive at 5 years. Breast cancer treatment is also expensive, and the costs soar dramatically when a woman is diagnosed at stage 2 or beyond. At that point, treatment must include chemotherapy in addition to surgery and radiation, adding at least $100,000 to the direct cost of woman's care, and significantly increasing short and long-term adverse effects from the treatment itself. CBE done independently of a woman's health exam costs less than $100 and done well can easily catch stage 1 breast cancer. The usual women's health exam includes CBE and pelvic exam with pap smear. I mentioned CBE done independently of women's health exam for two reasons. First, some women legitimately do not need pelvic exams and pap smears every year, but do require breast exams annually. If the pelvic exam is not done, the visit does not qualify as a women's health exam and will not be reimbursed under most fee-for-service health plans at this time. As a result, women don't seek breast cancer screening in the years when they don't need pap smears. Or worse, they get a mammogram alone without CBE, and both the women and their clinicians are falsely reassured by a negative mammogram. Optimally, CBE should always precede mammography, because a questionable finding on CBE dictates a more focused mammogram, thereby maximizing screening benefit. Second, thorough CBE takes time, up to 5 to 7 minutes per breast in some women. Not surprisingly, it is impossible to fit an exam of this length into the 30 minutes usually allotted to a complete routine women's health exam. If CBE were reimbursed separately, clinicians could either add time to the women's health exam slots or reschedule a woman whose exam would take more time and do her CBE separately, thereby markedly increasing the quality of the exam. There is one detail of House Bill 2498 that concerns us, and I was pleased to see the amendment suggesting a lower age. Because CBE is particularly beneficial for younger women, when mammography is less helpful, we do recommend omitting the age clause or lowering it as has been suggested. Finally, we recommend adding language to House Bill 2498 that requires documentation of the time taken and technique used for clinical breast exam to qualify for separate or additional reimbursement. There is substantial evidence that the single most important factor in improving clinical breast exam is taking sufficient time for the exam, and our ongoing research substantiates that fact. The current consensus statement from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the American Cancer Society states that the vertical strip, three-pressure method of CBE is best, and this exam technique definitely takes increased time. Clinicians using other methods of CBE should document at least 3 to 4 minutes per breast. In summary, clinical breast exam is an inexpensive, widely available physical exam technique that can help detect cancer early and save lives. Historically, it has not been considered a procedure because it does not require technology to perform. Reimbursing clinicians for performing this procedure will save lives, improve quality of life, and have substantial economic benefits for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlee.
Dr. Steiner, thank you for coming. I welcome you, as I said before, both as a colleague and a constituent. And if I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make also a brief statement similar to Representative Roblin. My mother died of early breast cancer as the three of her four sisters, which led me to believe that there's a 50% chance that I'm a carrier of BRCA1 gene, the gene that leads to early breast cancer. Consequently, both of my daughters have been very cautious about making sure they have complete clinical breast exams and mammographies on a regular basis from the time they were much younger than age 40. And that was an important part of their care, and they were both members of a health plan that made this a routine matter and not one of health insurance coverage. But what I was trying to put on the record when I asked Representative Rosenbaum, and I'd like you to put it on the record as well, is that what we're talking about here is the coverage in fee-for-service healthcare plans of an extra procedure and therefore an extra fee for the delivery of this important service. And you might comment just a little bit more on the probability that would make this much more likely to happen, given the fact that physicians would be incented by paying for the time that it takes to do what they're doing on this and therefore increase the likelihood of this as a procedure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, thank you for that question. Yes, let me be very explicit. We are asking that there be a separate fee payable to physicians, not payable by the woman herself, that would cover clinical breast exams separate from any other aspect of the women's health exam. And we do this for several reasons. First is the concern that I mentioned earlier, that women who medically do not require pap smears on an annual basis do require a clinical breast exam, and that coverage will not be provided by their insurance plans at this point because a CBE alone is not considered rich in women's health care. And so offering the opportunity for separate billing structure, separate fee structure for CBE will incentivize women to get that care and clinicians to perform it, and it will be a covered service that will save lives. Second, one of the other issues is the time. We've been teaching this technique, as I mentioned, for about 6 years now, and I can tell you that to a person, every single clinician that we've trained at any level of medical education says, "But this takes so much time to do right." And we say, yes, it does. And that's what the evidence shows. Evidence-based medicine tells us that taking enough time for the breast exam is what's going to make it the most sensitive, the most likely to detect breast cancer at its earliest stages. And if we do not provide this separate payment, then this time issue will continue to be a huge problem for clinicians. I've heard clinicians tell me they only are allotted 20 minutes for a complete routine women's health exam. And to ask them to spend 10 of those 20 minutes doing a good breast exam, even 6 of those 20 minutes, really shortchanges the woman and the clinician from optimal care. We need to reimburse this separately. I hope that answers your question.
It does indeed. Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. No?
Any other questions? Could you stay for a minute? We're going to stand at ease. Do I need to bang the gavel to say stand at ease?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Steiner, I have some questions about the third paragraph of which carries on to also on to page 2 of the first page, and there's some procedures here that I'm not understanding the nature of the procedures themselves. First of all, the clinical breast exam. How much when we talk about mammography screening, I need to know, relative to the science around that, what all is involved and the procedures. And then we're asking someone from the insurance industry to come in and relate to us. I'm sorry for the flurry of activity here, but one of the things I've asked, we had previously some testimony from some of the insurance industry that indicated that proper clinical breast examination provided as a part of women's health has an additional cost, but the net cost of providing that service is zero or less. In other words, we have an opportunity here, as I see it, to provide a service to the women and those others who would require clinical breast examination, and also improve the health at no additional cost. And so that's testimony that I want on, I would like to have on the record from the insurance industry. But at the same time, I'd like to know about this issue of the false negatives and how we're overcoming that, what's involved to give us the false negatives, and how you resolve that as a professional.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, you've asked me several questions, which I will do my best to answer, and if I miss something, please don't hesitate to catch me after this response.
Don't fear about that.
I won't, but I just want to acknowledge it up front that my memory may be imperfect. Let me work backwards, if I may. The question about the false negative rate of mammography is a very important one, and I want to start by addressing that. The technology of mammography has improved dramatically over the last 15 to 20 years, and we're actually in a paradox with mammography. In many women, we now detect breast cancer at its very earliest stages, when it's still what we call in situ, in one place, confined to the actual duct in the breast where it originated. And so we catch some of these cancers and treat them extraordinarily early. And many would say, in fact, too early, because there's a fair amount of evidence that ductal carcinoma in situ does not always proceed to breast cancer. So we have a technology that, on the one hand, picks up things that we may not actually need to be treating, and on the other hand, misses true cancers that do need to be treated in women who have real, honest-to-God, invasive breast cancer. The biggest problem is that younger women's breasts are denser. The tissue that makes up a younger woman's breasts is what we call more radiographically opaque. It's harder to see through it with an X-ray to see abnormal findings than it is in an older woman's breast, a woman who's gone through menopause and no longer has the glandular changes associated with hormonal cycles that younger women have. We are hoping, eventually, to be able to find other technologic advances that will be helpful in detecting breast cancer early, especially in younger women. There may be some promise for things like MRI, but at the moment, that's an extraordinarily expensive and not widely available technique and has no proven value for routine screening in any age group, with the exception of women known to be at high risk because, as Representative Greenlick mentioned, genetic carriage of a gene known to increase breast cancer risk. In those women, there's some evidence that MRI helps, but not in any other group of women. All medical technology evolves remarkably rapidly. Mammography, we hope, will be included in that list. Computer-aided detection seems to be helping somewhat, but again, is imperfect. Focusing who reads mammograms into a smaller group of radiologists, there's very clear evidence that that helps, that the more mammograms the radiologist reads, the more likely he or she is to spot breast cancer at its earliest stages. But technology will never replace the sensitivity of the human hand and the complexity of the human brain. We have not created a computer powerful enough to do that. We are capable as human beings of detecting, in the good breast exam, 3-millimeter masses. That's smaller than the tip of a pencil eraser. And when breast cancer is at that small a stage, it's almost entirely curable. And we believe, and this takes me to the second part of your question, that this needs to be reimbursed separately, and there is a cost. I would beg to differ with your colleague from the insurance industry. Because as a physician, my time is what I bill for. And this is particularly true for primary care clinicians and obstetrician-gynecologists who are doing these exams. It is not a procedure. Procedures are what pay in medicine. Pap smears pay. Pelvic exams don't. Clinical breast exam is a procedure. It takes time. It takes expertise. It takes additional training to do well. And if you do a clinical breast exam well on a woman with an average-sized body, it will take an additional 6 to 10 minutes. That's the time amount of time it takes me to evaluate and treat, evaluate, diagnose, and provide treatment for a child with an ear infection. For that visit, for a child with an ear infection, I will bill somewhere in the neighborhood of $100. For a routine sick kid, come in, get a diagnosis for a simple problem, and that's actually below average for most of the nation. Medical care is relatively cheap here in Oregon. So it seems inappropriate to me and to my colleagues and to those of us advocating this change to not reimburse clinicians for their technologic expertise, for their procedural competence in providing high-quality clinical breast exam that saves lives.
Mr. Chair, clarification. If I may, the clinical breast exam that you're talking about is different from mammography then? Is that?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler. Yes.
And so where mammography has such a high false positive ratio, do we have a percentage of success of clinical breast exam?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler. Let me just clarify and add, one of the proposed amendments to this bill put forward by the insurance industry is to define clinical breast exam more explicitly. I have provided for the committee's consideration three articles from medical literature that I believe you have available to you, two of which are from CA, a journal published by the American Cancer Society, one of which is from the American Journal of Rentgenology, which is one of those words I can never pronounce, the radiologist journal, that talk about the value of this technique of breast exam, and that this technique, this method of physically laying hands on the breast and examining it thoroughly using the clinician's hand, is the best way to do it and is the most sensitive. I would point out to you that the article from AJR about the differential value, the incremental benefit of clinical breast exam cites even without high-quality CBE, because I can assure you that those clinicians that were in that study are not necessarily ones who've been trained to use this technique. Even without that additional training, this is an incremental difference of 10%. 10% of breast cancers are detected right now with poor, sometimes really poor clinical breast exam techniques. 10% of breast cancer is detected by clinical breast exam alone. And if we use the right technique, that number will increase, and the size and therefore severity of those cancers will decrease.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I'm understanding exactly what the procedures are, but I think that perhaps, and my memory may not serve me correctly, perhaps it was the mammography that we were told actually saved money in the long run. But it has such a high failure rate. That's why, reading from your testimony, Dr. Steiner, that with this high failure rate, my concern was, it is if the CBE is a different procedure and it has a very excellent success ratio, then I think that's what I'd like to hear insurance industry as to which of the two procedures they're presently paying for that they presently recommend, and I thought we were having greater success ratio with the technologies and the technological strides in mammography.
Mr. Chair, may I address Representative Butler's concern? Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, your points are well taken, sir, and I appreciate your making them. Let me clarify one thing, if I may. Breast cancer is fortunately much less common in younger women, and that's why its low success rate in younger women is, from an economic perspective alone, not as much of an issue. That's why we do save lives and save money in older women with mammography. What we're arguing here, what we're proposing and advocating here, is that we give all women the best chance of having their breast cancer found at the earliest stages when it's the most treatable for the least cost and the least adverse effect. We're not saying mammography's bad. We're not saying don't pay for mammography. We are. I strongly support 2497 as well as 2498 and ongoing coverage for mammography. Neither is sufficient. Both are necessary. Women deserve both.
Mr. Chair, may I just comment on those numbers? The Radiological Journal article points out that when you do mammography alone, you pick up about 78% of the cases. That means that there's 100 women who ultimately have proven to have cancer. Mammography alone will pick up 78 of the 100. The mammography plus the breast exam will pick up 84 out of the 100. So out of 100 people who actually have breast cancer that had both procedures, 6 more will be discovered that would not have been discovered by mammography alone. And that number, I'm sorry, 4 more will have. But in the younger women, that gets more like 7 per 100 that would be picked up by doing both mammography and the clinical breast exam. So it's not that mammography has a very high failure rate, it's just that that's a tricky disease to find sometimes. It hides. But when you can do both mammography and the clinical breast exam, it just picks up an important number of different women, in particular when those women are our children or our wives or our mothers or our friends. That 6 in 100 makes a huge difference, and that's what's being talked about here. It's not whether we ought to be doing one or the other. The fact is, 97 and 98 will give us the opportunity to cover both mammography and clinical breast exam, and that will just add to lives. And I think what the insurance industry is really saying is that these are relatively inexpensive on a population basis to add these, and the savings in the cost it takes to treat a cancer that gets into stage 3 or into stage 4 is so much greater than that. If we can stop it and we can find it at stage 1 or even stage 2, we really do save a lot of money.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions, and then we'll get to Representative Boone. I'd like you to clarify some issues for me. This standard cancer screening that you're doing, you are doing, what I think I hear you saying is you are doing the CBE already. And in fact, the insurance companies, for the most part, do reimburse for that visit and those services that you're performing. And you do the CBE as part of the standard of care. And so I think what I hear you saying is that you're asking for another mechanism to lengthen the examination, which you are saying that you were saying that it would provide a much better examination for the individual that's being evaluated, and you are asking for an additional ability to be reimbursed for that longer CBE exam. Is that right,
Mr. Chair? That's exactly correct.
Okay, so can you? I guess I have two questions. I mean, you're already doing the CBE as part of your standard of care. So in this bill, you're already being reimbursed part of that. It may not be an adequate reimbursement. You're articulating that your time is more valuable than you're being provided for under the standard reimbursement situation. But my understanding is that House Bill 2498 sort of codifies what the insurance industry is already doing in terms of providing a package of reimbursement, whether or not that's adequate or not. That's what this bill is doing, is codifying that package that generally they're already providing for. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's not entirely correct. Yes, you are correct in saying that CBE is already a part of the covered women's total annual women's health exam. The concern is that, as I said, some women do not require an annual complete women's health exam. They do not medically require a pelvic impact every year. and in fact it is medically inadvisable for some women because we end up with false positives on the pap smear side of things, which causes its own set of problems. But many of these women, and I fall into this category, do require annual breast exams. And they do require screening for breast cancer on an annual basis. It is currently not possible for a woman to walk into her clinician's office and get preventive care, screening for early detection of breast cancer alone, separate from a complete women's health exam, and have that visit reimbursed. It will not be paid for. Her mammogram would be paid for. She can pick up the phone and call and schedule her mammogram, or her doctor's office can schedule her mammogram, but she can't get a breast exam paid for. So in those years when she does not require, medically require a pap smear, she's not getting complete screening for breast cancer because it's not paid for. And in the years when she does require a pap smear, if her breast exam is one, and obviously to some extent this depends on a woman's body shape, how long the breast exam will take. Women who require a longer breast exam to do really good quality screening are either not getting good quality screening or paying for it out of pocket. And many women choose to do that. And many clinicians choose to advise their patients to do that. But it's expensive, and it's an unnecessary expense because we should be providing this separate reimbursement or additional reimbursement for a complete women's health exam that includes a documented high-quality CBE. And that's why we specify in our suggestions that the amount of time taken for the exam and the type of exam, the technique used for the exam, be included in the visit documentation to ensure that clinicians aren't continuing to do the quicker, less sensitive breast exam and still receive the additional reimbursement. We want there to be a lot of bang for this buck.
But why would a clinician perform an inadequate if they have an ethical responsibility to do the best job that they can?
Mr. Chair, that's a very important question, and I'm glad you asked it. Let me tell you what goes into a routine women's health exam, routine standard of care. Woman walks in to see me, and first she sees my medical assistant and gets her vitals taken and asks if there's anything specific she wants addressed. I sit down and talk with her, and at bare minimum, I ask her about current levels of sexual activity, use of contraception, childbearing plans, preconception counseling if she's thinking at all about becoming pregnant, mental health issues to make sure that she's not depressed because, as many of you know, depression is very common among women of childbearing age. I ask her about exercise and diet habits to ensure that. I ask her about her smoking status and counsel her about smoking cessation if that's appropriate. I ask her about alcohol and drug consumption and counsel her if that's necessary. And then I get a chance to do her physical exam. Now, and that's assuming she has no chronic medical problems. If she has chronic medical problems, then either I have to say, I'm very sorry, we can't discuss these today, you have to make a separate visit, or I'm now 15 to 20 minutes into my 20 to 30 minute exam, which leaves me with a whopping 5 to 10 minutes to do her entire physical exam. Or else, if I take the time necessary to do the exam properly, which will take me 20 minutes if I do the breast exam properly, then my entire schedule gets thrown off. My patients get grumpy. My front office staff gets grumpy. And I'm seen as being not responsive to my other patients' needs. We want to provide this care. We really do. But the system's set up against us. And a lot of physicians just say the heck with it. And they provide the longer exam, and they do it, and they've been trained properly to do it. And then their schedules get thrown off, and then people run late, and you just have to figure out which meal you're going to skip next to get your patients back on track. I'm not trying to whine. I'm really not. I'm trying to say that physicians today, especially primary care physicians who are providing frontline care to get women and men the best preventive services possible, are stuck. We are shortchanged by the system, and this bill is designed to fix one aspect of that shortchanging.
Out of curiosity, on the front end, you're saying that you're spending a lot of time on the front end before you're able to get to the physical examination. What have you done to streamline the amount of time that you need to do to get through that so that you can maximize the amount of time that you have to be able to spend on the physical examinations?
Mr. Chair, those are very important systems questions as well. On the front end, there are certain things that we can do. We provide advanced registration for patients so they don't spend a lot of time at the registration desk. We make sure that our medical assistants have standardized protocols for what to do so they don't have to think with every patient, what do I do with this patient? Every single piece of conversation, every single question I just mentioned to you has an A or B level recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which means that it's either strongly recommended or recommended for performance as evidence-based, high-level care to give to women. In fact, just asking those questions dramatically streamlines it, because there's a study that showed about a very well-done study within the past 6 to 12 months that showed that if clinicians did everything that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends to their patients, 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to tell me which ones you're going to eliminate. I'm just saying, how have you adjusted the system to try to enhance your ability to work through that process so that you can maximize your time for the physical exam?
Right. We do certain things. For example, many of our offices now include smoking or tobacco use as a vital sign, which means that we ask patients every time they walk in the door, do you use tobacco in any form? And that's included on their flow sheet, where they record blood pressure and weight and height and temperature, because we think it's that important. And so if my medical assistant has already asked and the answer is no, then I don't have to ask that question. Patients fill out routine health questionnaires where we ask them about alcohol and drug use. And if it's an established patient and I've already had the conversation with her, then I can just look at her health form and say, any changes in how you use alcohol or drugs, or are these levels still the same, or whatever it is, as long as I don't have any suspicion that there's inappropriate usage going on, and I can eliminate those questions. I didn't even mention family history, by the way, which, as Representative Greenlick mentioned, is a very important aspect of screening for breast cancer and cervical and ovarian cancer, because all of those are known to have genetic components. So I wish I had a good answer for you. I hope that when we all have electronic health records, that a lot of this will be more automated and can be included. We're hoping to make patients more active partners in their care by allowing them to update their records in the long term electronically as they're waiting to see us. All of those are things that will help in the long term. But for now, we're stuck. There's only my brain and her brain
okay. In
that room.
Thank you. Representative Bruin.
I just wanted to, and I'm really glad that we took the time to expand on that, because what I'm experiencing the same thing in my situation. I've had my doctor, a primary care physician, for 31 years. And so you've left out the friend aspect.
Right.
That when you only see this person professionally, you may have to spend some time asking questions, how are the family members, and et cetera. But I think that's important, too, because one other thing you said earlier on is the human touch. There's also the human mental touch between the doctor and patient, where that may be the only person you're comfortable with sharing some information, and it may predispose how the exam goes. So I don't think you can shorten that, and I hear what you're saying, too, and I know in my own case I'm very aware of that. When I go to the doctor, every minute I spend talking to him about something that's not the exact reason why I'm there takes away from that, and it pushes the schedule off. But I hear you saying that this is what is happening with the physician, is that they must then take that 20-minute or 30-minute period, and as things get crunched down, you're choosing which piece either you'll leave out, if you can, through just figuring out, okay, I don't need to do this and this and this, but it does shorten that time for the CBE that is really needs to be first hit. If we're truly going to be addressing something in a preventive, cost-effective way, and I'm thinking, what I just got a bill for my mammogram, which was $160, and if a CBE would cost $100, that's $260. If a detection can be made at that cost versus not doing it, skipping a year and having something come in later and say, we're looking at $100,000 here, that's a no-brainer. I would think that the insurance company would embrace that as a top-flight, preventive, first-strike, preventive mode to get this problem that is highly treatable and has the evidence to back it, and that they would go for this immediately. And I have to say, I didn't realize you're asking for an additional, but I see that point now. So thank you for letting me expound on that.
President Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would like some cost information on it, kind of a numbers, kind of a person, and I guess the first thing is that I understand we're talking about with a primary care physician taking the time to do this. This is a approximately $100 procedure. I would like to have some feel for that. And then I have some questions that probably go to some of the issues that we're faced with in the professions. My concern is that when we have the CBE being performed, and it is technical, but it is non-recorded, such as a mammogram would record, or other kinds of instrumented research is done, or procedures are performed, then they leave a trail. They have something that you can go back to. I'm particularly concerned about liability insurance at that particular point. What cost driver is that? And then finally, in my past experience, we've heard from other medical professionals and medical providers relative to the issue of boundary zone violations. And I'm concerned about that discussion. I think there needs to be some kind of discussion if we're going to be involved with more hands-on with regard to male physicians that may be involved here. How clinical are they in their approach, and are we going to have boundary zone issues? And Doctor, you've seen those issues arise before, and I just would like to have some kind of discussion regarding those three issues: the cost, additional professional liability, where it's just your recollection that I did not feel, I didn't, I, my hands feel this and your hands feel something else. And Mr. Chair, I think it's time for me to confess. My wife went through this. We had an OBGYN say there is nothing wrong. I'm sorry you can feel it, because I can't. It's not there. Your mammogram says there's no problem. And we knew there was something wrong. And she did have breast cancer. And I felt that we had been betrayed. Our primary physician, who was an OBGYN, refused to refer us to a specialist because there was nothing wrong. This was all in our minds. And so we had to go to another state to seek this kind of professional help outside of the state of Oregon. So my concern is that his hands felt nothing. And I'm wondering where in the process is my own personal responsibility. My wife thought it was our personal responsibility to take care of self-breast examinations and to be able to report that. But his professional at CBE said, you're imagining things. So this is a professional liability issue, too, and I'm concerned about what that does in this process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Butler, and I don't think that you should feel like that was a confession. I mean, I think it's an important issue that you should bring out, and we appreciate you sharing such a personal situation. All I can say is we'll try to be responsive to your questions, and we'll figure out how we can
do that. Mr.
Chair? Yes.
May I answer a couple of representatives' questions? Because I think I can offer...
But you know what? If we keep talking, we're going to exhaust all of our time.
Okay.
And the people in the audience aren't going to get to it. So if you could keep it brief.
Certainly, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler. Again, let me start backwards. Boundary issues are very important, and I'm very glad you brought those up. When we train clinicians in this new technique, we insist on two things. We teach them how to talk with their patients about the fact that this breast exam is going to be different from any other breast exam they've ever had. And we strongly urge them to mention that to every patient before they do the breast exam. We also insist that male clinicians have a chaperone in the room during all breast exams. Now, we can't force that to happen, but I can tell you that that's our standard of training, for exactly the reasons that you put forward. Even our female physicians, we strongly encourage to have them explain to their patients that this is different for exactly those reasons. The liability issue is an important one. I will tell you that Northwest Physicians Mutual, one of the two major malpractice carriers in the state, thinks highly enough of this technique that they underwrite the tuition for their covered physicians for this course that we teach in this method of breast exam, and they offer a risk reduction decrease in their malpractice premium if they've taken this course. The other piece of that is documentation. One of the most important things that physicians do is document their exams carefully. In the articles that I've provided you with, there are standards for how any finding must be documented to meet really good communication. And if there are no findings, then that needs to be documented very clearly as well. Forgive me, but I've forgotten that. Having gone backwards, I've forgotten that the first the boundary we talked about with the cost. As I said, as a standalone, if a woman just comes in for a CBE, a guesstimate would be $75 to $100. Based on how much time it would take and based on what we bill for similar amounts of time devoted to examining and evaluating a particular body area in a patient. As part of a women's health exam, it would be an incremental cost and it wouldn't be as high because some of the costs would be amortized because they'd be distributed over the rest of the women's health exam. I can't tell you an exact figure that we'd advocate. I think that's up to negotiation between insurers and clinicians, as all of these fees are, but it wouldn't be as high as that.
Thank you.
I hope I've addressed your questions in a brief manner.
Thank you. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Steiner, I've got several questions, actually, if I may, Mr. Chair. So are you saying that I see that 700 clinicians have been trained, and actually I was up at OHSU and I observed some of the training that happens with this more extensive breast exam. So would this bill require that more physicians, that perhaps all physicians who would be giving women physical exams, be trained to do this more extensive exam?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, we can't require physicians, unfortunately or fortunately, to do any specific training. What we can do is make it worth their while. We can do what Northwest Physicians Mutual has done and that I hope CNA will eventually do, which is to underwrite the tuition for this cost. We can provide a financial incentive for doing this exam and for documenting it clearly, as we recommend as part of HB 2498, but we cannot require it. I can tell you that some health plans see this as important enough. I'm in discussions right now with Clear Choice Health Plan in Central Oregon, who plans on underwriting tuition for virtually all of their clinicians who provide breast exams. Because they see this as so important.
Follow up. How much is that tuition, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, it's about $350 per clinician.
Another follow-up?
Follow-up.
What proportion of the problems would be detected with this extended breast exam as opposed to the shorter, more routine breast exam?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, we don't have a precise number on that. Our estimate is that right now, we know right now from the literature that somewhere between 5 and 10% of breast cancer is detected by clinical breast exam alone. Our belief is that if every clinician did this kind of breast exam with every patient and did it before mammography, that this would detect approximately 20 to 25% of breast cancers. But that is an estimate, and I cannot tell you. We have studies in progress that are trying to answer those questions, but I don't have those data for you yet.
Great. And can you tell me if any other states have mandated this type of breast exam?
We believe not. We believe Oregon would be a leader in this regard.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Steiner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Mass traffic sometimes. Okay, are there any additional questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get the impression that the Pap smear is not an annual exam for some women or for many women. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, that's correct, sir.
And that mammography is not as effective as the CBE.
No, sir. That's not quite true.
It's screening.
Neither mammography nor CBE is perfect.
Right.
In fact, even mammography and CBE together aren't perfect, unfortunately, even when done properly. Both of them are very good tests, and they're even better when they're used in combination.
Okay.
We need them both.
I got the impression that CBE, in your mind, was more effective than mammography.
No, sir. Mammography still will pick up, depending on which group or age group we're looking at, somewhere between 60 and 90% of breast cancers. Some of those breast cancers would have been found earlier if they had those mammograms had been preceded by a high-quality CBE. I don't think that we can claim that CBE is ever going to detect, under our most wildest optimistic dreams, more than about 25 to 50% of breast cancers. But within those 25 to 50% will be the 10 to 40% that are undetectable by mammography.
Okay.
Does that clarify it, sir?
40%, but you're talking about the over 45 age.
Actually, I'm talking about all ages. In fact, CBE will be most helpful in that younger age group, mm-hmm. Especially for highly trained clinicians doing CBE. But it will not replace mammography. There's still 60 out of 100 women under 45 who have mammographically positive breast cancer.
I don't want to pursue it at this point. We can maybe talk later.
Certainly.
Two things. First of all, what's the incidence under the age of 45, say in the 20 to 30 and 30 to 40 age groups?
The most recent figures I can give you are about 5 years old, and we know that the incidence in the younger age groups is increasing. About 5 years ago, the incidence rate, which means how many women in a specific age group will get this disease every year, the incidence rate is about 1 in 500. It's not small.
Is that in 20 to 40 or 20 to 30?
20 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
I can't give you separate figures off the top of my head. I'm happy to get you that information later.
Okay. My final question is, in listening to your the completeness of your exam, there was quite a bit of information that was spoken that could be, I would think, having in my dental practice, I would have the assistance, either the hygienist or the dental assistant, taking some of that, the vitals are being taken. But how about some of the descriptive information on tobacco usage and some of those? Couldn't that be more easily taken by an assistant, leaving you more time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that's an important question again. One of the things that we've discovered, for better or for worse, on the medical physician side of medical practice as opposed to the dental side, is that patients are often reluctant to share as much with a medical assistant as they'll share with their doctor or their nurse practitioner. We wish that weren't true, because our medical assistants are highly trained as well and can certainly do appropriate things with that vital information. But historically, patients don't disclose as much to our ancillary health professionals who work with us as they do to us.
True, but we're talking about costing more, and health insurance is not as expensive now. I think patients may have to be trained to be able to turn some of this over as we move into the future.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you. Representative Greenleaf, for the good of the order, we've gotten through everybody's questions. Nothing to add? Okay. Well, Dr. Snyder, we greatly appreciate you visiting with us and sharing your insight on this issue. Hopefully you won't go away in case other issues come up. So we'll excuse you from the panel. And, colleagues, we're going to get through the four pages of lists of people who are, or two pages of lists who have signed up for this bill. And we want to make sure that we get everybody, give everybody a chance to participate. And I think we have a little bit of a time management issue, because I know that some of our colleagues have other commitments after 10:30. So just making an announcement now that if any work that we don't get to today will be carried over to the next hearing, if we don't get to everything today. The next hearing being Friday morning at 8:30. We have to announce that because of our 48-hour rule situation. So, with that, I'll just take a moment to figure out who's coming up next.
Mr. Chair, perhaps it would be helpful if we have a number of people testifying on the identical same issue, that they don't repeat the testimony of the people before them. And secondly, if they have written testimony to offer, that they can submit that to the committee, and then we can review that testimony following, rather than just providing it in writing and then reading it back to us.
Okay, well, hopefully people make that decision as they come up. Okay. Is Catherine Selmes here? Catherine Selmes, Sylvia Loftus, and Sharon Brenner, please. Okay. And if you have any written materials to provide for us, feel free to deliver them to the committee assistant, who will distribute them to the panel. And if you don't get a chance to participate, we always welcome public testimony in writing after the fact. We're not close to it, so we can, if there's anybody out there listening on the internet or anything like that, we are happy to accept your testimony as well. So good morning, welcome. We'll have Catherine begin.
Good morning.
And if you could all say your name for the record as you come up, that would be appreciated.
I'm Catherine Selmes. I'm a volunteer for the Reach to Recovery program. And I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you my experience with breast cancer. Over the years, I've been blessed to have doctors who took the time to educate me about breast cancer and the different signs that I needed to watch for, as well as ordering the mammograms every year. I had cystic fibrous breasts, which meant they were very dense and thus hard to read or see any changes. In 1999, just before my, a couple of weeks before my yearly exam, I noticed that one of my nipples had started to invert. And because of the training I had gotten from my doctor, I knew that this was a sign of breast cancer. And it was. However, everyone felt it was as close to a stage one as I could possibly have, so there was not a real heavy concern that I was going to have to go through all of the radiation and chemotherapy that you do with a larger amount. And they also felt that because of this, I could have reconstruction at the same time. I decided to have both breasts removed. I did not want to be running back to the doctor all the time trying to find if I had an imaginary lump or pain or something and be worried. I just thought I'd like to get this all over and done with and get on with my life. So I had 8.5 hours of surgery on December 30th, 1999. My surgery went well. And I was actually amazed at how little pain I had and how well I was getting along until I saw my surgeon, and he walked in with this too large a report. The pathology report came, and I had invasive cancer in that breast. Two of the five lymph nodes had cancer, and there was cancer, non-invasive, in the other breast that I had chosen to have removed, none of which showed on the mammogram. But then again, here I had the dense breasts, and even though I was older, I knew that we were in trouble, and I say we because my husband was at my side the whole time from the very beginning, with every doctor's office, everywhere. I had suddenly a whole new way of life facing me. The next day I was at the oncologist's office talking about chemotherapy. Day after that, I had a full-blown case of thrush in my mouth. My mouth and my throat were white, and I had white strings hanging. I had the dry heaves, the whole works. And, of course, they said that, you know, after so many days, you could lose your hair, but it might not happen until the second case. I got up on that day, my head hurt. I went in to take a shower and get ready because we were going somewhere. Washed my head and came down with hands full of hair. Hollered at my husband and I said, get in here and shave my head. And he said, we don't have time. I said, I'm not walking around the city dropping hair all over the place. I'd rather go without. And because my head was sensitive and I couldn't wear caps or anything of that sort, I chose to go without. I just told my husband, this is the way I am and people can accept me that way. And so they did. I did also tell my husband that when I lost my hair, we would be bookends. And so we had a picture taken at my daughter's house with some books on the counter and John on one side and I on the other. We've had a lot of fun with that picture. In fact, I carry it with me all the time. The chemo went well, and you get into a routine of having chemo, feeling lousy, slowly getting better, having a few good days, and then you start it all over again. Then radiation started. And because I had had reconstruction, this became a very tricky process. I did end up having to have the implant replaced on the right side. Radiation had hardened it, and there was adhesions that didn't allow movement. The year 2000 was filled with many new experiences and lots of wonderful, caring people. Women who came and shared with me their experiences and assured me that I, too, would be okay. And because of that, I became a Reach to Recovery volunteer for the American Cancer Society. We all need to be aware of the signs of breast cancer and use every test there is to give us a head start against this disease. Mammograms and clinical breast exams fill this need, and so does the time for the doctor to educate you while he's doing these things. Please pass these bills.
Thanks very much. And please don't infer anything from our colleagues walking in and out, you know, that haven't had a restroom breaks at 7:30 in the morning, so or other issues. But we're all very appreciative of you being here to testify. And if I could ask the folks coming up beyond, if we want to get to working these bills out today, we've got to be as crisp as possible, otherwise we will run out of time. So thank you. Proceed. Who's next?
I think I am.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Sylvia Loftus of Salem, a member of the Marion County Legislative Action Team for Planned Parenthood, and I'm here to speak to you about House Bill 2497, although I also support House Bill 2498. 2497 is an important bill for all women and, by extension, their children and the men in their lives. For me in particular, this law, the law that this bill extends, saved the life of a very dear friend of mine, one of my best friends. Sally was barely 30 when she called me to tell me she had an abnormal mammogram. I could hardly believe my ears when she told me she had cancer. She was my protege. She was a decade younger than me, and I'd watched her grow and mature for years, personally and professionally. Now, she was barely able to speak in public when we met. We had the chance to travel together, to represent an organization to which we both belonged, and we learned more about each other's lives and families and ambitions during that time. Sally has two daughters and two additional children in her blended family. She's a loving wife and mother, and she's married off both of her daughters, and recently she became a grandmother. Professionally, Sally rose to a responsible management position in a large corporation. I watched her develop her people skills, and today she can turn any situation into one where everyone wins. Sally wouldn't be here today if she hadn't had that mammogram covered by her health insurance. Early detection led to a partial mastectomy. She healed with support of countless new friends she had made during the years I watched her world expand with increased professional responsibility and pursuit of her personal and artistic goals. Sally's a survivor, and I'm glad to say she's still one of my best friends. Thanks for listening to my brief story. Mandated insurance coverage for basic women's health care is an important public health and economic issue for Oregonians, with its impact on prenatal care and cancer screening for the most common cancers in women. Thank you also for removing the sunset provision in the current bill. I hope that I can trust that you'll continue to support this bill and give it a successful trip to the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharon.
Good morning, Chair Dalto and members of the committee. I'm Sharon Brenner. I serve on the board of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, and I'm also board chair of Planned Parenthood of Columbia Willamette. Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon would like to add its voice of support to House Bill 2497. Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon represents the two Planned Parenthood affiliates in Oregon, Planned Parenthood of Columbia Willamette, and Planned Parenthood Health Services of Southwestern Oregon. We have 16 clinics statewide, including an online health service. Last year in Columbia Willamette alone, we served nearly 50,000 patients in our clinics. As a health care provider that provides screening for cervical cancer, we understand the importance of providing insurance coverage for a patient's annual exam. An annual Pap test can be a life-saving procedure for many women.
Screening has the potential to virtually eliminate invasive cervical cancer, and just as important, the chances for survival for women diagnosed with cervical cancer are greatest when detected in this earliest stage. It is also essential to require health insurers to cover pregnancy and delivery services to help ensure that women are receiving quality prenatal care and that they experience healthy births. Equally important is continuing to cover mammography. American women have a 1 in 7 chance of developing breast cancer. Mammography is the best breast cancer screening tool available today. Mammography, pelvic and pap exams, and healthy pregnancies are vital to women's basic health care. Renewing these requirements will ensure that Oregon women continue to have access to the best tools available for protecting their health. I thank the chair for lifting the sunset on these requirements and urge on behalf of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon passage of House Bill 2497.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sharon. All right. We'll move on to our next panel. Thank you. Now I'd like to invite Cheryl Richardson, Shar Andrews, or is it Andreas?
Cheryl has gone.
Oh, she has gone. Okay. And Laura Bridges?
Do you know if this is greater?
She's gone. So since Shar is not available, is...
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Oh, okay. So Shar, Cheryl, and Laura? Oh, Cheryl. Cheryl is gone. Okay. Well, then we'll visit with this panel. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Nisha.
Okay. I feel very... I'm Charlene Andrews.
Thank you.
And I feel very honored to be here today to talk to you. I was first diagnosed with breast cancer in December 2000. It had already spread to my bones. Therefore, I am a stage 4 survivor. 4 years going on 5. The cancer has spread to the liver and lungs. In March, I will have been on some form of continuous chemo for 3 years. Did you know that Oregon and Washington have the second highest rate of breast cancer in the United States? Did you know that breast cancer is the most common cancer among adult women of all ages? This is why I'm here as a survivor. There needs to be equality for all women over 40 to have access to mammograms and for clinical breast exams to be available for women over 20. There are more breast cancers being found in younger women today, women who still have children at home. They need their life in order to take care of their children. I'm very fortunate to having the quality of care that I have, and I count my blessings for that. Expenses for my care have reached to over $420,000, with about $4,500 coming out of my own pocket. I do consider myself fortunate that I have been able to have my life extended as I have. This has enabled me to help educate others on breast health. I continue to be able to exercise, doing my 3-mile walks and playing tennis twice a week. Most important of all is that I can still have time for my grandchildren, even though they are out of state. After using oxygen for a few months, I now only need oxygen if hiking or walking in higher elevations. Just up to 2 weeks ago, I needed oxygen for playing tennis, but no more. I feel strongly that all women should be able to have their mammograms and clinical breast exams. There should be no prejudices when it comes to health care. We are all important human beings. Therefore, I strongly urge you to support the mammograms for all women over 40 and clinical breast exams for those under 20 who are not covered by insurance, no matter what their income is. Early detection of breast cancer increases the chance for effective treatment, because cancers which are treated early offer a woman the best prognosis. And I have left you with the brochure from OSHU in regards to the new vertical strip 3-pressure method of breast exam, which I think is very important. I've also left you with a poem that is very special to me. as to what breast, what cancer cannot do. Thank you.
Well, we thank you very much for being here as a survivor and as an educator and as an advocate. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I'd just like to thank the testifier for bringing forward the issue of breast self-examination. I think that that's an issue that's been left largely out of the discussion at this particular point. We all have a great deal of responsibility for our own individual health, and I think that that's where our health issues really are number one, and particularly then from the information in this breast self-examination, which shows the average size of when you'll find a lump versus when someone else may under that process.
And the new exam is very much more extensive. It covers the more of the area of your breast, where 50% is found in the upper quad, where doctors don't even examine. They just examine the mound. And so this includes a much larger portion of the breast. And it's very important for women to know this.
Thank you. Chair.
Thank you so much. All right. Laura?
Okay. Good morning, Chairman Dalto, members of the committee. My name is Laura Bridges, and I'm board and affiliate president of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon. I'm here today to urge your support of House Bill 2497. You've already heard many of the medical reasons why this bill is important to women of Oregon, and you have my written testimony. So in the hope of saving time, I'll just let you look at my testimony. But I'd like to go on record as stating that NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon promotes the full range of reproductive options that include preventative measures that ensure women's reproductive health, which is why this bill is so important to us today. Women deserve equitable coverage, and removing the sunset is going to make this a reality. I'd just like to ask you to continue to support women's health through this bill, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for being here today. All right. Now, is Kathy Eaton available? We'll ask Kathy Eaton to come forward. Linda Teal. Is Linda Teal available? Okay. And Judy Foreman?
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. Judy Foreman? Okay, great.
I see that. Oh, I was going to help you. Thank you. Thank you.
I didn't even know she said I didn't see it. That was just a man being trapped here.
I understand.
Pamela. Okay, welcome. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you, Representative Delta, for having this hearing. For the record, members of the committee and Representative Dalto, I'm Kathy Eaton, Governance Coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan, political organization which encourages citizen participation in government. We believe in a basic level of health care for all citizens, and this includes an equitable distribution of services and an efficient and economical delivery of care. We've supported the health insurance coverage for such basic health care for women as pregnancy, childbirth, mammograms, gynecological exams, and pap smear examinations for the past 12 years. I just want to make a couple of comments. Unfortunately, this hearing on HB 2497 says volumes about the status of women in Oregon. In 1993, and again in 1999, and now in 2005, we are required to address the health care issues which should be included as basic health services in women's health insurance policies. In 1999, when it took 5 months to get a hearing to repeal the sunset in insurance coverage, there were many editorials around the state. And in my own city of Eugene, the Eugene Register Guard headlined its comments with, "This is a no-brainer. Enact the bill." HB 2797 fortunately has no sunset clause, and it calls for continuation of current policies regarding insurance for these services. It's time to follow the admonition of the Guard and enact this bill. Thank you for the opportunity, and the League urges the committee to send the bill directly to the House with a due pass recommendation.
I appreciate your testimony, and actually just wanted to let you know that we scheduled this bill as soon as we had it in our hot little hands, so we're glad that that we could take it up as soon as realistically possible. So thank you. And Linda Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Linda Teal, and I reside in Salem. And I will just very briefly tell you my story. In August of 2002, I was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of breast cancer. In fact, it's a type of breast cancer that normally occurs in women much younger than my age. And the tumor in my breast went undetected, and it was only discovered as a result of my annual mammogram. The deeply embedded lump could not be detected during exams by my physician or later on by the surgeon, but it clearly showed on the mammogram. Without the mammogram and early detection, I would not be here to submit this testimony today. Given my personal experience, I know mammograms do save lives. It is vital that insurance covers mammograms so that all women can afford to have these screenings. I encourage you to vote yes on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Judy Foreman.
I'd like to thank you ahead of time for more work ahead of you to pass these bills and the privilege to speak to all of you.
If you could just say your name, that would be great.
My name is Judith G. Foreman, preferably Judy.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak to the issue of both bills. I almost didn't come this morning. Even though I'm a survivor of 15 years, it is still difficult. I titled my story this morning, really early, before 6 o'clock, The Real Hero. The real hero of my story is a mammogram, not myself. I was too busy with living and too absorbed in meeting business goals to get a mammogram that year in 89. Did I make an appointment and cancel it? Or did I not make one at all? And that was before medical professionals sent out nice, neat reminders to make that appointment. Nor was anything detected by my doctor. In any case, that was before. This is after. In August of 90, I had a mammogram. I do remember this day clearly. It was my husband's birthday. It was warm and sunny outside, and I was gardening, loving every moment. And that same day, I got the call. My husband called me from gardening to take a call from my physician. And like in slow motion, I went to the phone. I already knew what he was going to say. The x-ray shows a suspicious area of your right breast. You need to see a surgeon immediately. And so it began. The long, painful journey to beat the cancer. The mastectomy and the chemotherapy were only a part of it. The mental torment of losing a breast was coupled with my fight with the insurance company. Almost from day one, coverage was denied from the more often than a year mammograms I needed to have to check the left breast, the chemotherapy, the breast reconstruction, and even the nipple. My cancer was in between stages 2 and 3. I was frightened and angry, having to deal with the insurance battle. Clinical exams I'd like to speak to for just a moment, since it has come up so much. My experience with my physician were very quick exams, 10 seconds at the most. And I eventually went to my plastic surgeon, and he started giving me better exams, But, again, as I said, nothing was detected. My cancer was underneath the nipple. It was not a nice, neat, hard lump. It was a thickening of the tissue. And only my surgeon could feel it. He says, Judy, don't you feel that? I said, no, I don't feel that. He says, well, it's there. Well, I got a second opinion. And then I got a third opinion. And it was there. Anyway, I wanted to say that the clinical exams must be in conjunction with the mammograms. It just increases the odds to save a woman's life. I'd like also to speak briefly about the 18-year-old group. When I got involved with volunteer work with ACS, one of my intentions, which didn't come to fruition, was to go into the high schools in Salem and teach about breast self-exams and about breast cancer to young women. I actually got clearance through the Salem School District to do that. But as I was so busy anyway with other things and reached recovery and teaching classes for ACS, I just didn't have the time. So that didn't work, but I'm glad to hear that it's on the table to be discussed. In conclusion, this is now. I survived. I live to share my story because of the real hero, the mammogram. I speak to and for the many women who need breast exams and mammograms, and the many who may not live to tell their stories. Thank you.
And thank you, Judy. We appreciate your story. Thank you. We'll excuse that panel and invite Marcia Kelly and Blaker and Jan Frankie forward, please. Good morning. Welcome. And Marcia.
I will be very brief, and I won't repeat lots of things that other people have said. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. Our member organizations are the American Association of University Women of Oregon, Oregon Now, Oregon Women's Political Caucus, Delta Kappa Gamma, which is an educational honorary with retired and current teachers, the Salem YWCA, and the Older Women's League. So that represents about 8,000 to 10,000 women in the state of Oregon. So you have 8,000 to 10,000 women in the state of Oregon who want and could contact you. We have members all over the state. I have, and I will provide the committee with some additional testimony on the incidence of cancer. One thing that has not been mentioned on breast cancer is that breast cancer does not affect women alone. Very, very few numbers, but there are normally about 1,700 men detected with breast cancer on an annual basis. I would urge your passage without the sunset of this bill because it's been too long and the women's rights organization doesn't want to have to come a fourth time to support this coverage.
But well, we love having you here.
But you can sing the other times,
and
too.
We can talk about other things. This bill doesn't have a sunset in it at all. So
I realize
we're not
that.
We're not putting one in. So, all right, thank you very much. Ann, Blaker. Is it Blaker?
It is Blaker. Thank you. Chairman Dalto and committee, I really want to express my appreciation for this opportunity. I am not a survivor myself, but over the last 20 years in my professional life, I've had the opportunity to work with many women, such as you've heard from this morning, and as you will understand, they're the inspiration for my being here. I currently chair the advocacy committee for the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, and so it's in that capacity that I'm here. over those last 20 years in my professional life, I've spent a great deal of that time working on public policy issues around early detection of cancer, and in particular, breast cancer. And we have worked very hard to gain the compliance of women here in Oregon for early detection practices such as mammography and breast self-exam, as well as clinical breast exam. Oregon has actually consistently been a leader in this area, happily to say, and in improving the compliance of women in using these tests themselves, and as well as the supportive policy here in Oregon. So I'm here actually with a very quick message. I have distributed my testimony to you, and the take-home message here is I'm gratified to tell you that although the incidence of breast cancer, not just in Oregon but nationwide, is increasing at about 2% a year, the mortality rate of breast cancer is decreasing 2% a year. So it's gratifying to me, and it should be gratifying to a lot of women and people in this room, that all of our efforts over the last 20 years are beginning to pay off. And in fact, I would specifically like to urge your support of these two bills, 2497 and 98, and I would like to thank Representative Dalto for seeing to the fact that the sunset clause is no longer there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Anne. Appreciate your comments. Jan Franke, welcome.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jan Franke. I'm a retired high school teacher. I'm also a cancer survivor. I'll be very brief here. My turn came as one of those 2,400 individuals that Senator Kate Brown referred to earlier, those 2,400 who were identified as cancer victims in 2001, excuse me. In my case, early detection through mammography saved my life. My doctor didn't find it. I wouldn't have found it because of where it was located and how small it was. My school year was interrupted, but, you know, you do what you have to do. I only had to experience radiation, so no chemo, no reconstruction, and many, many hours of lots of people's time and many, many dollars were saved because my cancer was detected at a very early stage. My students did have to do without their teacher for almost 3 months, however, because this is a pretty tough situation that you find yourself in. I'm a member of the Komen Advocacy Committee. Another member of that committee who had planned to come today and who is ill would tell you that her situation was the reverse of mine. Her situation was found through palpation rather than through mammography. So speaking for her, I would tell you this. We need both exams, and both exams will help us to save lives. I urge you to vote yes on these two bills and expedite them to the House floor. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jan. And would you express our best wishes to your colleague and hope for a speedy recovery?
Thank you. I will convey that.
Yes,
quick
question.
Did her, the palpitation, did she discover it herself or did her physician discover it?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that, Representative Tomei. I just know that in a conversation that I had with her, hers was...
It was her physician.
It was her physician.
Thank you.
And she is an RN, so...
Yeah, interesting. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, all of you. Colleagues, can your schedules accommodate running over a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Not that we're going to stop, but hopefully you'll stick with us. And certainly, if you have to run out, we'll advise you all before any sort of vote is taken. So, Joanne Rogovi, is it? We'll invite Joanne forward, and Lupita Salazar Lesher, and Elizabeth. Kortenhoff. Thank you. Couldn't tell if that was a U or no. Elizabeth Kortenhoff. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank
Actually,
you.
We'll wait for them to have a seat. Oh, okay. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Go, Joanne. Go ahead.
Chairman Dalto and committee members, my name is Joanne Rogovoy, and I'm the state program director for the March of Dimes. Our mission is to improve the health of mothers and babies by preventing birth defects and infant mortality. On behalf of my organization, I'm here to urge urge you to support House Bill 2497. Our expertise on this bill is the pregnancy and childbirth related expenses that are mandated. I just want to be very brief. And having health insurance affects how people use health care services. We know that uninsured pregnant women get fewer prenatal care visits, and they have a harder time finding needed services during pregnancy. The lack of health insurance during pregnancy is a major cause. The lack of health insurance that covers pregnancy-related costs and an inability to pay for those costs out of pockets is a major barrier to participation in prenatal care. We know that mothers who do not receive prenatal care or receive prenatal care late in pregnancy are twice as likely to deliver a low birth weight or preterm infant. A low birth weight or preterm infant is 14 times more likely to die in the first year of life. If the baby is very low birth weight or very preterm, that infant has up to a 70% chance of dying in the first year of life. Poor birth outcomes that are preventable, like some birth defects and prematurity and low birth weight, cost Oregonians millions of dollars. We know that the cost for a preterm or low birth weight baby on average is 30 times higher than a term infant of normal weight. Our organization also is glad to see the sunset clause is not in this bill. The need for accessible pregnancy and childbirth related services will not go away in 6 years. We urge you to support the bill. The March of Dimes will be advocating for the bill. And on behalf of the March of Dimes, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Joanne, very much. Lupita.
Yes, hi, Chair Dalto, and hi, committee members. My name is Lupita Salazar-Letcher. I reside in Tigard, and I am here representing a large community health center organization, provider of prenatal care in Oregon for 18 years, Yakima Valley Farm Workers Clinic. I'm also a nurse. I've been so for 13 years. I'll be very brief. My colleague, Joanne, has given you many statistics. I would just like to offer any resource that I can be. If you need any more information specific to preterm or low birth weight babes, I will say that access to prenatal care plays is very important and vital to healthy outcomes for women and for healthy births in Oregon. I will also add that access to insurance for all women makes sure that these services are provided. The most effective way to prevent preterm and low birth weight births is to get early and regular prenatal care. We know this. One of the best ways to ensure access to prenatal services is for the legislature to continue their support and legislate the requirement for basic women's health care coverage and insurance, including pregnancy services. Again, I would like to voice my support for House Bill 2497, and thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much, Lupita. Elizabeth.
Good morning, Chairman Dalto and members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Kortenhoff. I am here in support of House Bills 2497 and 2498. In October of 1997, I was 5 months pregnant with my twins, and I found a lump in my right breast. My doctors assured me that it was simply breast changes due to pregnancy. But when the lump remained, and in fact grew to about 4 centimeters, after the twins were born, I had a needle core biopsy and learned that I had breast cancer. My oldest child was 2 and a half. My twins were 6 weeks, and I was 38 years old. Breast cancer does not just affect women over the age of 40. 4 and a half years later, a mammogram found a small lump near the original tumor site. My cancer had returned. The lump was small and was found by mammogram. It would not have been found had it not been mammogram. Mammograms catch more cancers than self-exams and doctor exams. When cancer is caught early, tumors are smaller and women have a greater chance of survival.
It is essential for insurance companies to require and cover annual mammograms for women 40 and older. In my own case, I'm convinced that had I had a mammogram at the age of 35, the original tumor would have been detected before it reached 4 centimeters. When I had breasts, I was very careful about checking for monthly for lumps. I was not a trained professional. I really had little idea what I actually was looking for, even though I had gone through training to look. A doctor performing a 5 to 7 minute exam would likely have found my original lump before it reached that 4 centimeters. Early detection of breast cancer has greatly improved the survival rate of women with cancer. More comprehensive breast exams as well as annual mammograms are critical to women's care. Both these bills give women basic health care that they deserve and should have. I thank you for removing the sunset clause. That's a step in the right direction, and I beg you to vote yes on these two bills. They're very important to women like me. I have a lot to live for, 3 children, very young. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
And thank the panel. Jeannie Giles Hackney and Kathleen Birch and Carol Robinson.
Ms. Robinson, we welcome another of my constituents to the.
Well, we're glad your district is well represented.
Well represented today.
And well represented in the legislature as well.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to all of you. Jean, excuse me.
Good morning, Chairman Dalto and members of the committee. My name is Jean Giles Hackney. I live in Portland. Many of my points have already been covered in the discussion, in particular in Elizabeth's testimony, so I will just give a summary of my testimony, but I do have a written copy for your perusal. On the morning of May 21st, 2004, last year, I found a lump in my left breast. It was later found to be an aggressive, invasive ductal carcinoma. I was 37. My story is not the typical breast cancer story. Only 5% of breast cancer patients are under 40. And more of these younger patients die from the disease than do older patients. There are various reasons for this, but the most relevant reason with regard to bills number 2498 and 2497, for today's purpose, is that the mammograms are standard of care for women 40 and older. Women's survival rates increase exponentially when tumors are found smaller. Therefore, the women over 40 have a higher survival rate because it's found on mammograms more frequently. It is therefore imperative that insurance companies continue to cover annual mammograms for women 40 and older. With regard to younger patients, such as me, this bill is critical because it requires insurance companies to cover 5 to 7 minute comprehensive clinical breast exams rather than the less effective 30-second exams. If I had not found my tumor, my OBGYN would have certainly found it upon his lengthy exam. In young patients, this cancer is usually a more virulent disease and is often not detected unless it has grown large enough to actually be seen with the naked eye or felt upon exam. I personally was very lucky. The tumor was on the top side of the breast, so I noticed it during the course of everyday life. If it had been on the chest wall, it would not have been easily detected and not during a self-exam. An OBGYN is trained to know the difference between dense, lumpy, young breast tissue such as mine and abnormal lumps. It is therefore imperative that insurance companies are required to cover the longer, more comprehensive breast exams by a doctor. Women with regard to breast cancer need all the help they can get, and I think it's our responsibility to ensure that the medical professionals are given the support they need to give women thorough and effective health care. Please, I support these bills, 2497 and 2498. Please vote for their passage They benefit us all. They benefit my two young daughters and my husband, and they give me a chance to survive the grim diagnosis of breast cancer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. Kathleen?
Good morning, Chairman Dalto and the members of the committee. I'm 56 years old, and my name is Kathleen Birch, and I'm 56 years old, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer in May of 2004. I guess the bookends are back. And I've been very impressed by the testimony that I've heard this morning and can add very little to it, except that I support both bills. And the only point I'm going to make, because all my other points have been previously made, goes with something Representative Butler brought up, which is the importance of self-breast exam. And I think if we support our clinicians in their longer, more time-wise breast exam, they can also include as part of their breast exam instruction for a woman to do her own self-breast exam. And many women don't do this because they're shy or they feel inept or they just don't have the skills. And so it's not that one takes the place of the other, but I think that supporting clinicians' time to do this would make both happen. And I'll bet most women in this room haven't had a 10-minute breast exam. As she was talking about a 30-second one, that's what most of us have experienced. So I think we need to support our clinicians. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carol? Chairman Dalto and committee members, my name is Carol Robinson, and I am here representing Oregon Business Association. I have listened to the compelling testimony of many women today that has moved me. I am here to testify from a different perspective in support of House Bill 2497. As a business organization, Oregon Business Association recognizes the importance of preventive health care. Preventive health care allows our members to maintain a healthy and stable workforce. But more importantly, as business leaders, our members know that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. There is no better example of this age-old adage than the items covered by House Bill 2497. As healthcare costs increase, and an informal survey of my members' companies estimated increases of close to 20% last year, it becomes a driving drumbeat to find ways to lower costs. And we at Oregon Business Association feel that attacking preventive care is the very, very worst way of trying to lower the insurance costs. Any steps that can be taken to decrease health care costs for insurers will ultimately result in a decrease in health insurance premiums to businesses. And while preventive care may cost upfront money to businesses, in the long run, it is penny wise and dollar foolish not to cover the services contained in this bill. The expense of treating metastasized breast and cervical cancers alone make the dollars spent on preventative screening tests inconsequential. And the long-term ailments and conditions that can be avoided by basic prenatal care are staggering. Oregon Business Association believes that this bill makes great business sense, and we also believe that it makes great human sense. Gender should not dictate who receives quality health care. The effectiveness of the tests and care contained in this bill are indisputable, and we, as a business association, support evidence-based preventive health care choices as good public policy. Thank you very much for receiving my testimony. I appreciate your time addressing this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carol, your testimony is limited to House Bill 2497.
At this time, it is Representative Butler, but we reserve the right to submit testimony on 2498 as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I thank the panel for visiting with us this morning. Colleagues, I think that we've gone through everybody on the witness registration list, although some people appeared twice. Did we miss anybody in the audience? You can raise your hand if we missed you.
No. Okay. Looks like we got to everybody. So we will wait for our committee administrator before we proceed. But my intention is to close the public hearing and go into a work session. So the committee will stand at ease for just a moment. Sandy will join us when she's able to. I would like to close the public hearing on both of these bills. But before I do so, are there any final comments by the panel? Any comments about the testimony? Okay, we can just get right into it. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2497, and we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2498, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2497. And colleagues, before we get to 2498, just let you know that we are going to have some clarification by representatives from the insurance industry on some questions, so we'll get that discussion before we conclude work on House Bill 2498. So we are in work session on House Bill 2497.
Do we need my light to come?
Yeah, we are waiting for one of our legislative counsel to clarify one of the points. There she is. Holly Robinson, please come forward. I asked legislative counsel to come by and just provide us with an on-the-record explanation of these two bills. There was a question as to whether or not these two bills were constructed in such a way that we could look at other issues as well. And so I wanted to get a definition of and an explanation of the relating two clauses on House Bill 2497 and 2498, just to get that on the record. So, Holly, if you would like to do that, that would be appreciated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Holly Robinson from Legislative Council. And as I understand it, I'm here to answer questions about the titles of the bills, and I think also answer some questions about the applicability of 743-700, which is the automatic retail statute, to the particular services in question. First of all, in the way that these two bills are crafted, the titles of the bills are specific, very specific, or very specific to what the content of the bill actually is. So 2497 addresses only the continuation of requirements for certain health insurance coverage for certain women's health services. In this case, it would be pregnancy and childbirth, PEPs, pelvic exams, and mammograms. And 2498 addresses health insurance coverage for clinical breast examinations. So that's the first issue. The other issue that I wanted to touch on just briefly and then answer questions, and most of the members are not totally new to this body. 743-700 is a statute that was passed in 1985 that created an automatic repeal of all health insurance mandate statutes 6 years after the anniversary of the date of their enactment. It has been, I was not here then, so I'm not totally sure what the motivation for it was, but as a drafter and as a professional staff member of the Office of Legislative Counsel, it's kind of been a nightmare because you have to pay attention to it, and we don't have the ability to repeal the statutes automatically. So it's a subject, it's a statute that's constantly being discussed. In both of these bills, 2497 and 2498, one of the ways that we make 743-700 not apply is just to state that directly. And you will see on line 25 on page 1 of 2497, it says, and actually if you look at page 2 of 2498, line 5, the language is pretty identical, but it says this section, which refers to 743-700, does not apply to, and then lists the specific statutes to which it does not apply. So in that case, because of the inclusion of this language, this issue will not come before the Legislative Assembly, except for in the context of 743-700 and whether or not the statutes have to be extended for another 6 years. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions because I'm sure there are some.
Are there any questions?
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Thank you. So with regard to 2498, the addition of line 5 on page 2, this section does not apply to Section 1 of the 2005 Act, that then removes the six-year sunset as to the issues relating to health insurance coverage for clinical breast examination?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's correct.
Is there similar, Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up, please.
Is there similar language, Holly, in 2497 that extends, and I think that you referred, I think you referred down to line 25, this section does not apply?
Correct.
Okay, and does that remove, that removes this issue basically forever, which is the health insurance coverage for pregnancy, childbirth expenses, mammogram, pelvic examination, pap smear examination, that removes that forever from the six-year throwback rule, if you will?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, it does. And I'm also going to take this opportunity to give you a lesson in compilation and what compilation means when we put all of the bills that this legislature passes together. In the event that 2497 and 2498 pass, what would happen is the new language, the bolded language that is on page 1 of 2498 would get a new ORF number. So it would be 743-123. And then when we put these two together and it gets codified on line 25 of 2497, it would then read, this section does not apply to those three statutes. And then there would be a new add-on that would say, and 743-123. And that's called compilation. That's when we'll have to put it all together and make it hopefully work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Robson.
When you don't do it right, we have the Scribner's bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I thought you liked our office.
Okay. I think that we've clarified what we wanted to clarify, so thank you very much, Holly.
You're welcome.
Okay, colleagues, we are still in work session on House Bill 2497, and so at this point I'd like to entertain a motion. What we need to do is we need to move this bill to the floor. We also need to rescind the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. So, Representative Tomei, do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that we pass 2497 out of this committee and send to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the subsequent the referral to the Ways and Means Committee be rescinded.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2497 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Are there any questions on this motion? Representative Butler.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. Do we have the ability to rescind it?
We do. It's been worked through the process, and we are prepared to rescind it.
Do we rescind it, or does the Speaker rescind it?
We rescind it. This committee rescinds it with in coordination with the Speaker.
The Speaker rescinds it, and we exercise the power to pull it off.
We rescind. This committee rescinds the joint referral on Ways and Means in consultation with the Speaker.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions or discussion? Okay. So we have a motion pending. We will call the roll. Staff will call the roll.
We rescinded with her position.
Representative Anderson.
He just killed it.
Roll call.
Representative Anderson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative
Freeman?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2497, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I will carry the bill on the House floor. And we're through phase one, step one. All right. We will close the work session on House Bill 2497, open a work session on House Bill 2498. And I would ask the insurance panel to come forward. John Powell, Pam, and Erica Hetfield, did you want to come forward? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross for the Shield of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pam Lally, and I represent Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon.
Great.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Erica Hetfeld, and I'm representing Pacific Air Health Systems today.
Great. Well, we wanted to invite the panel forward to share with this committee a little bit of a discussion on House Bill 2498 in terms of what the insurers are already doing, what the insurers are prepared to do to work with providers on this bill, and just get your statement on the record in support or opposition of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, first let me explain that it's not a question of whether these services are necessary. We all know they are. In my family situation, I have a sister who's a breast cancer survivor. I held my dad's hand as he died from cancer, and my brother is currently going through treatment for prostate cancer. So the detection and early detection of cancer is and the services to detect it are not in question. The question that arose earlier today regarding House Bill 2498 dealt with reimbursement for a breast exam alone, absent the rest of the woman's annual exam. Pam has been on the phone, we've been going back and forth in the back of the room to try to get some answers to that question. The long and short of that answer is that was an issue without this bill. I mean, that's the bottom line. Pam can inform you of what our company at least is doing in order to resolve those issues around billing for the exam in isolation of other services with a woman's annual.
Mr. Chair, could I just clarify one thing, John, for the record? The bill would require it to be covered with a woman's health exam as well as without one, is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenwood, that's correct.
Okay.
The issue, however, I think that the doctor raised was because it is not always appropriate medically for a woman to have a complete exam, that the billing for the individual clinical exam was the issue. And I was just trying to separate that out. That's a good point you make, Alan. And Pam can explain to you what she found out in terms of what we're doing to clarify the singular exam.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dr. Steinem raised an important issue. There is a billing dilemma for physicians if they provide a clinical breast exam separate and apart from their annual exam. There is currently no CPT code, which is the main method of communication between a physician and a health insurance carrier, to identify that service being provided. It is the intent of Regents to cover those services, whether they are conducted as part of an annual exam or separate from the annual exam. And we do, in fact, cover those services. There are times when it is unnecessarily cumbersome, however, for the member to get it covered. And so we are in the process of petitioning our professional association, which is Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, to develop a temporary code for clinical breast exams. Those are known as S codes, and if they were to be approved by the association, they are available industry-wide and not used just in isolation of association plans. So Pacific Source, HealthNet, other carriers would also be able to use that temporary code for billing from their providers. Once that is done, we will then work with our association to petition the AMA, which is where CPT codes are officially determined, and ask that a permanent code be established for clinical breast exams. And that will simplify the matter for our members and for providers in the community.
I think that means you have no objection to this meeting.
That would be correct, sir.
President Butler.
Mr. Chair, if I'm hearing our representatives from Blue Cross correctly, however, the AMA hasn't developed CPT codes, that we're going to have to develop temporary codes. Is Oregon the first place that this is happening?
I can't answer that question, Representative Butler. I can tell you that it's my understanding that Oregon does not, you cannot state by state establish billing codes. It's my understanding that the AMA is the national authority for developing CPT codes. So by law, even if you were to create a statute that required it, by law you would not have the authority to do this. You'd have to go to the AMA. So my guess is that it's been raised in other states but has not been resolved.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Then, with regard, Pam, with regard to the clinical breast exams, all of our writing indicates this is part of a regular health exam by a health professional. Does that mean an annual health examination, or is this more frequently, less frequently? In other words, the insurance industry is telling us there's no additional cost for this particular service, and there's no objection, but this is your understanding is it's strictly an annual service.
No. Representative Butler, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer your question adequately. I'll attempt. We currently cover this as part of an annual exam.
Okay.
And so it is our interpretation of the bill at Regents that there would not be an additional cost impact because this is a service that we already provide. In addition, if we have a member whose physician believes that it's medically necessary for her to receive or him to receive a breast exam outside of their annual exam, it is our standard business practice and our intent to cover that exam. So again, this bill would not result in additional costs for us as a carrier. Is that the base of what you were going for?
It is, Mr. Chair. Final question relative to a separate Dash 2 amendment that we had have before us, or an opportunity to at least peruse. The ages of 40 were struck and included the age 18. Is that an additional cost, or that would be part of an annual examination for an 18-year-old as well?
Again, I can speak only for Regents, Representative Butler, and we rely on the billing code that the provider delivers to us, and if a provider believes it's necessary for a service to be delivered to our member when it comes to their annual exam and preventive services, it is not our business practice to question that.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
And I will just say for the record that we're not moving the Dash 2 amendments today because that would trigger a fiscal that would necessitate this bill being sent to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And so Representative Rosenbaum, who brought forward the Dash 2 amendments, is aware of that and will work her amendments, I suppose, in the Senate side. So, are there any further questions or discussion at this point? It doesn't look like there is any. So, we're still in the work session. Representative Tomei, is there a motion on the... Wait. Right, we want to hear from... Sorry. We want to hear from... We're trying to get to the floor at 11 o'clock here. I want to hear from Erica Hetfield on the Dash 1 amendment.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't want to take up any of your time. I know you have to go. I'm here today on behalf of Pacific Air Health Systems, and our client felt the necessity to work with Representative Rosenbaum to come up with a definition of clinical breast exam because it's known in the provider community, but general public and patients might need this outline form. We just wanted it for future clarity and hope you can support the Dash 1.
Well, I'll just say thank you very much, Erica. Thank you. I'll just say for the record that in consultation with the insurance industry, although the Blue Cross Blue Shield isn't speaking for everybody, it sounds like the consensus is that there was not an objection to the bill as it's written now. So I wanted to add that for the record. And at this point, we will move to an amendment. And Representative Tomei, do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment dated February 14th, 2005 to House Bill 2498.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves the Dash 1 amendments dated February 14, 2005 to House Bill 2498. Is there any discussion on this amendment? Is there any objection to this amendment? Those of the opinion that the Dash 1 amendment should be adopted will say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. No. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted. And Representative Tomei, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2498 be sent to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on House Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves that House Bill 2498 be sent to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
Sure.
Yes, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm going to support your motion today to move forward with this particular legislation, but I do want to state for the record that, number one, I believe that a greater emphasis needs to be placed on self-examination and the patient's own responsibility for the issues relative to the body. Number two, that I am concerned relative to the additional professional liability that could be created as a result of expecting a greater level of discovery when we've had information indicating that discovery is a problem even with the professionals and with the higher level of technology which is afforded us today in the medical field. And so I am concerned about the greater level of professional liability that we're exposing professionals to for the CVE examination. And finally, I continue to be concerned about the issue of the boundary and zone violations with regard to physicians and practicing clinicians relative to the clinical breast examinations, and I am concerned that the rules need to be adopted, the administrative rules need to be adopted so as to protect those professional clinicians which will be performing these examinations, whether they be male or female, that they have an opportunity to be protected by the rules so that we do not have a plethora of a rush to the courtroom to protect patients when they feel like there's been a boundary violation.
Thank you very much, Representative Butler, for your comments. Is there any additional discussion? Well, I guess I'll just say that in anticipation of passing this measure, I appreciate everybody being here today. I appreciate all the work that's been done, and I'm sorry that it took this long, but we're about to vote on a bill that's going to remove the sunset permanently. So congratulations to everybody that's been a part of this.
May I make a statement?
By all means.
I want to compliment our chair today. We're taking such assertive action to pass the, not only to hear these bills, but to have a work session and pass these to the floor. And I think he's done a memorable job, and I want to thank him.
Thank you very much, Representative Tomei, for your kind words. Any final discussion? Is there any objection?
You call the roll.
Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative
Green? Aye.
Representative
Butler? Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2498, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair will designate the chair as the carrier. We will adjourn the hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll type them up in the future.